You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of May 31st, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Memorial Day observed. Just what does the Manchester Rangers station do? Summer soccer coming to Manchester. And the play begins again.
On Monday, May 31st, Memorial Day observances were held in Manchester, in addition to other local communities, to honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice while serving in the nation's armed forces. A group of local veterans led the way in a short parade down Cemetery Avenue to the Factory Point Cemetery, where those gathered heard a short speech by Bruce Charbonneau, who served with distinction in the U.S. Marines and was also the commander of the local chapter of the Veterans of Foreign Wars from 2015 to 2019. He was introduced by Chris Conti, the current post commander of the Harned Fowler Post 6471.
At DFW, we say, as long as two comrades survive, so will the Veterans of Foreign Wars render tribute to our heroic dead. We are assembled once again to express our sincere reverence. This grave represents the resting place of many departed comrades who served in all wars. Wherever the body of a comrade lies, the ground is hallowed. Our presence here is solemn of all these men and women, an expression of our tribute to their devotion to duty, to their courage and their patriotism. By their service on land and on sea and in air, they have made us their debtors. For the flag of our nation still flies over the land of the free people.
Thank you, folks. Welcome all on a special day, Memorial Day, for all of us. Welcome to our Memorial Day celebration. It is on this special day each year that we reflect and give thanks to those men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice to ensure that one day we were able to enjoy the very freedoms we hold so dear. Robert E. Lee once said, "It is well that war is terrible, or we would become fond of it. The danger in not remembering the sacrifices made by these men and women is that as a nation, we never forget the price of freedom is never cheap." It is again on this day that I encourage you to take a few moments and say thanks to a veteran, whether you know them personally or not. Do not underestimate the power of this seemingly simple yet powerful gesture. Whether the veteran made the ultimate sacrifice or returned with unspoken difficulties, it is because of these brave men and women that we enjoy the very freedoms we do today. Thank you and God bless you.
Following a rifle salute, the ceremony concluded with a rendition of Taps. A short time earlier that morning, a similar ceremony was held at the Delwood Cemetery in Manchester Village.
Let us today remember local veterans, such as Peter Brooks, United States Navy, Red Hinckley, United States Army, Vincent Frawley, United States Air Force, and Leo Charbonneau Jr., United States Marine Corps, who are no longer with us, who served our country with honor and distinction.
Thank you.
For the GNI-TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Hey folks, Oz from GNAT News. Today I'm in Manchester and I'm at the Ranger Station. I've seen this building all my life and I kind of have no idea what they do. I would definitely flunk a test on it. So today we're going to be meeting...
Hi, this is Martina Barnes. I'm the new district ranger on the Manchester Ranger District.
And she's going to tell us exactly what they do. So let's go meet her.
Well, this is the Manchester Ranger District office, and we're part of the Green Mountain and Finger Lakes National Forest. So our forest includes portions of land in New York and in Vermont, and we're part of the U.S. Forest Service. It's an agency that's managed under the Department of Agriculture. There are 193 million acres that the U.S. Forest Service manages across the whole country, and in our part, neck of the woods here in Vermont, the Green Mountain and Finger Lakes National Forest is about 400,000 acres.
400,000 acres?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And that's like,
I've hardly been on any.
Who knew, right? This office here, we oversee about 240,000 acres in the southern portion of Vermont. It incorporates about 30 towns, and that ranges from... goes from Wallingford in the north to Bennington in the south. And all of those towns have small portions, in some cases large portions, of national forest in them. And so the U.S. Forest Service has what we call a multiple use mission. So that's like why we exist. And I'm going to read what our actual mission statement is. We are managing for multiple uses. That includes for water, for wildlife, for wood, and for recreation. So we are not like the National Park Service that's primarily focused on like recreation management, but we manage for multiple uses. So that means that we actually have also have some active timber harvesting. We have what's called a forest plan. That's kind of like our guiding document. That's a legal document that we have to follow. And so our forest plan explains how the different parts of the forest should be managed. So we are not managing all areas for timber harvesting. Only certain areas are considered like okay for timber harvesting. Right. So we work usually with local contractors to do that. And that's a very public and open process that we use to explain to the public what our different projects are, so that the public can provide input on some of these projects. We also do a lot of work in recreation, so we have many popular trails and recreation areas on the Manchester Ranger District.
Does that include lakes too?
Yeah, we have so Hapgood Pond, yes, and Grout Pond,
right.
Somerset Reservoir,
yeah, okay,
is another popular recreation area. We also have the Appalachian National Scenic Trail and the Long National Recreation Trail, both cut through the Manchester Ranger District.
Right,
so those are like really, really popular. Right up the road from this office, there's an access point to the Appalachian Trail and the Long Trail off of Route 11 and 30.
Right.
And in fact, actually, Bennington and Manchester are what we call official Appalachian Trail communities. So they're like, because they, you know, sponsor sections of the Appalachian Trail in their towns. So they're proud of that designation.
And that gives you a heads up, you can go buy food.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly. Go come to our town and enjoy the food.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so some other recreation, and then wildlife, we manage for to protect certain wildlife species. So any wildlife species that's federally threatened or endangered, we have to, you know, protect. So like one example is the northern long-eared bat is a federally threatened species,
right.
And so we have to be really careful. We can't cut trees during certain times of year, and we have to make sure that we stay a safe distance away from any bat caves. That's just one example of where we would manage.
And along that, are you also trying to create habitat?
Yes. What we do is we create wildlife openings, and so a lot of the forest, you may notice, is you know, it's forested, so it's not open. And many types of birds like open spaces within forested areas. And so we actually do cut some trees down, and we do some small burning, what we called it prescribed burning operations in forested areas to create these openings, these wildlife habitat openings, especially for bird species.
If I wanted to, I'm a private landowner, and I wanted to create a better habitat.
Yeah.
Is that something I could come to you folks for advice on that, or is that really...
Yes, we can definitely help you out. The Forest Service also has another part. It's another part of the Forest Service that's specifically geared towards working with state and private forest landowners. It's actually called state and private forestry. And if you want, we could put you in touch with the Vermont State Forester's office could really give you more detailed advice, but we can totally, I mean, we have a full, even
I'm
though.
I'm sorry to do that.
No.
This is like a black hole.
Yeah.
The more you go into it, you go, wow, it goes in so many directions.
Yeah, no, it goes, it's like tendrils, right? But we have someone who answers our office phone Monday through Friday, even if currently we're closed because of COVID.
Right.
At the moment, we are still closed to the public, but we do have someone at our front desk who can meet you outside and talk to you or give you answers over the phone.
Gotcha. Yeah. What messages would you like to leave us with, I guess?
Sure. First of all, I think I want to share that we, as a general public, all need to respect the resources that are out there. We need to be careful about our trails, trying to stay on the trails, we have trail maps and designated areas where hikers, bikers, and ATV use can happen.
So you just can't roar through the woods.
Exactly. We can only, and most, all of our trails are signed with where motorized use is permitted. You shouldn't be using your ATV on a trail that's designated for hikers only, for example.
And with all these new people up here, are the trails getting hammered? Or
totally, yeah. Which is great. We're seeing such an increased recreation use across the district.
Okay.
There's people coming from everywhere, and that's wonderful because it also helps our local economies.
Right.
All these people from all over, but we just want to get the word out that it's really important to just respect the trails so that the next person can use it and the next person,
right,
and that it's not destroyed.
And you don't have to keep fixing it every weekend.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
So, and take your trash with you. So
trash.
That's also a good, if you find beautiful flowers or plants, leave them there. Just take a photo and post it on Instagram. Try to avoid, if you see a rock face with crystals, don't take the crystals with you.
No dynamite.
Again, just take photos. That's what we encourage.
Same
with another one is caves. If you see a cave or try to avoid going into the cave, especially during the summer months, that's when the bats have their babies, their pups. And
is that still a problem?
Sure.
The white nose syndrome is a
disease that impacts bats, and it can has killed thousands upon thousands of bats. It's still around.
Wow.
In fact, that's one of the reasons why that bat species that I mentioned earlier is threatened. So try to be mindful of the bats. Really, if you have questions, first of all, just enjoy, have fun, really recognize and that this is a really unique resource that Vermont is fortunate to have a national forest. Not every state, especially in the eastern United States, has a national forest in their backyard, and we do. So we should be grateful for what it offers us, both from a recreation, from timber, wildlife, watershed for clean water. That's a big one I forgot to mention in the beginning. The fact that our forests filter our water and provide clean water for us. So we really all benefit from it, and we should be try to check it out. And if you have any questions, feel free to call office or check out the website, and I'm available anytime.
Cool. It was so nice meeting you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Applejack Stadium in the Dana Thompson Rec Park in Manchester will be the central site locally for some high-level sports action featuring several schools and soccer organizations which have come together to build upon past efforts to make Manchester a summer sports mecca. Two soccer organizations in particular will be featured, the Black Rock Football Club, which is based out of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and which is part of the USL 2 League, an amateur developmental soccer league sponsored by the United Soccer Leagues in the U.S. and Canada, and the locally based Vermont Fusion, which for the past 25 years has offered youth sports in the Manchester and the surrounding communities at a variety of age levels, will be headlining the action over June and July, with 11 matches all told. The schedule can be found on the website applejackstadium.com. Manchester's town manager John O'Keefe gave us some background as to what will be going on.
June 5th, we have Black Rock Football Club versus the Boston Bolts. And then the next day, Sunday, we've got a 6 o'clock kickoff, the Vermont Fusion against Westchester, New York. So those are two new teams to the area. Black Rock Football Club has been in existence for several years now. They moved their home to Manchester from the Berkshires, and that's a USL League 2 team. So they're, I guess you, in baseball terms, you think of them as a single-A baseball team. Their team is made up of mostly college players, a lot of them from Division I schools across the country, and then they have a couple either players on hiatus or that have previously played in the Major League Soccer, which is the U.S. top league. So kind of a mix of veterans and newer players. That league is dubbed the Pathway to the Pros. So it's sort of an entry point for kids who want to play professional soccer. And they have that club has players playing in the MLS, a bunch playing in the MLS, and then actually one of them is playing in England in the top league in England, and a couple other clubs internationally. So they've got a good track record for producing good players. So I think that'll be really interesting. And then the Vermont Fusion is playing, which is a club that's been in Manchester for years, but has never had a team at this level. That's the Women's Premier Soccer League, and that is the second tier of women's soccer in the U.S. So it's right underneath the league that, like, Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, a lot of the U.S. national players that you'd see on TV playing in the international games, a lot of those players are playing in that league. So this is a league just below that league. That team is made up of actually some local players and then players as far away as Hawaii and Colorado, Illinois, are some of the states that the players come from.
We also had a chance to talk with Eric Perry, the Vice President and Director of Operations for Vermont Fusion, who described what they do. Their women's premier soccer league team will be playing 3 matches over June and July at Applejack, but they also offer instruction and matches for younger players as well.
So Vermont Fusion has historically been a youth club. So we have ages ranging from U8s, so under 8s to under 18s or 19s. And that's on the boys and the girls sides. And we have, I think we're over 220 players this season, which is, I think, is pretty remarkable given the fact that we've come off of a pandemic the guidelines and the mandates are kind of letting loose just at the right times for us. As much work as that created for us, certainly we're excited that many people are ready to play soccer and be outside and doing things. So, you know, pretty exciting for the community and kids especially. The other part of what we're doing now is the Women's Premier Soccer League team. So this is essentially the highest level of amateur play that you can have in the United States on the women's side. And we're pretty proud and honored to be doing this. Applejack Stadium obviously is a gem that the town has helped create, and John has been part of that kind of force and motivation towards creating this initiative. If you want to encourage groups and organizations to come here, use this facility, and create Manchester as a soccer and athletic destination. And for us, it's really a no-brainer to utilize the fields that we have In the past, there weren't enough fields to kind of share with lacrosse and other spring sports, and the numbers weren't there, but certainly now we are. So the WPSL leads into that idea of this team is a higher level team. A lot of the players are Division I level college players. Some have graduated college already, but still have an interest in playing beyond, which would be professionally, either here in the United States or overseas.
One highlight weekend that's shaping up is the weekend of July 7th through 10th, when the Rec Park in Manchester will host one of three Women's Professional Soccer League International Combines. The other two will be in Buffalo, New York, and San Diego, California, making Manchester like a player that's punching far above its weight. There's also a business and economic side to all of this, as John Burnham, the executive director of the Manchester Business Association, told us.
You know, I think that, you know, we're lucky as a community, not only as a business community, but as well as a residential community, that we have world-class fields like Applejack Stadium and Dana Thompson Park to be able to host, you know, some world-class teams playing soccer, lacrosse, all different sports. And what that does for us, as you can imagine, is draw not only players, which normally travel from other destinations, not only in Vermont, but all over New England. And in this case, some of them are coming from across the country. That obviously produces economic uptick for businesses because they have to shop, they have to eat, they have to stay somewhere. And then on top of that, you know, you've got folks coming to see the games. And not only is this a great opportunity for locals to enjoy something unique and different, but also it brings in families and friends and relatives of these sports players or just sports enthusiasts coming to Manchester to watch these games take place at the stadium.
You know, it's one of the things that we've been working on in economic development. Instead of going out and building new things, you know, the best advice that people will give you is you should use your existing assets, improve them if you need to, like we've done here, and build off that base. So we're trying to look at what we have for assets and then try to build an economy around that. Some of it is like a sports-related economy, but the interesting thing about this and a lot of the different things that communities do is this is also providing a benefit to local residents too as we continue to improve the recreational facilities that we have. It not only adds to the tourism side, but also makes the town a nicer place to live and work.
All in all, it's shaping up to be an exciting summer for local sports fans, and with a fall sports schedule following close behind. That will feature high school soccer and football games, as well as college soccer games. For the GNet TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Bit by bit, life seems to be slowly returning to something closer to normal as vaccine progress continues. One sign of that progress is the return of live theater at area schools, among them Burn Burton Academy. But instead of the school's theater at the Riley Center for the Arts, the spring theater productions were held last week on a temporary stage set up on a courtyard elsewhere on the school's campus. Last week, the school's performing arts department put on an abridged version of Romeo and Juliet, along with four one-act plays, three of them written by the students, and another one-act entitled 14 Lines. It's about a group of students struggling to learn Shakespeare sonnets and perform them for a final exam the next day. We caught part of their last rehearsal the day before the curtain rose.
No, I've got to be quiet up here so I can concentrate.
Sorry. Something wrong?
It's this stupid assignment. If I don't get this perfect, I'm graduating. Can you believe that?
Believe it. It's the same thing for me. Why couldn't you just give us a normal final like every other stupid teacher?
This sucks.
Yeah. And I think the thing is we all have to do good on the summer thing or we don't pass our class.
Jim Raposa, the director of the school's theater and dance, discussed what it meant to get back on the boards.
It will be the first time that we have been able to have a live performance in over 15 months. And that's a pretty significant time to go without being able to do something that you love to do. The sports extracurricularly, were able to get a lot more guidance on what was safe outside and as long as they were outside. But theater, with being in such close proximity to each other, we always had to kind of go by the rules of trying to make sure we were 6 feet away and all of that. And those were our challenges that we hit. It feels like it's a reset for us. We get a chance to do something we've never done before, which is to do something outside, to do more of a festival situation, to be able to interact more with the audience than we would normally do in the theater. So I think it has its own merit with the students, and they're extremely excited to be a part of this. We have a great set design that was done by Paul Molinelli, and we were able to use sets from past shows to kind of create this stage out here and this atmosphere out here. And he did a great job designing it to use the building behind me, which is the original headmaster's house here at BBA, and incorporated that to use as part of our backstage and part of our set piece. So it's he did some great work with our tech kids. I would say overall we have probably about 35 kids between working on stage and backstage, and then the kids that were in our tech classes to help us out.
And how long have you been rehearsing the show?
Well, we started rehearsing this in the fall, and then COVID reared its ugly head, and we had to postpone that. And so when we came back in the wintertime, we had a quick meeting, and I said, hey, what do you guys want to do? And they had stated that we had worked so long on all these other pieces that we should try to go back and see if we can remount them in the springtime, and that's what we did. And so it's been kind of nice to be able to pick those pieces up, revisit them, and create a new version of them.
We also had a chance to talk with two of the actors in the plays, Gabby Craig and Julia Lund.
Yeah, it was really different. We had to adapt a lot, and we didn't have stage until a week or two ago, so we were doing this all without a stage. And when you don't really have a stage, you have to learn all the blocking and mime doing it without actually having steps to step on. But doing it outside, it made it harder because we'd have wind and we'd have noises that we wouldn't normally have, and we'd have people crossing back and forth that weren't in the show and making a lot of noise and things that we couldn't predict happening. And so we had to learn how to adapt really quickly.
Yeah, it's definitely been a little bit of a challenge just because we're outside and there are people around on campus, and so it's just been like a little bit challenging with people walking through and then being like loud enough and stuff like that. But it's been interesting, and it's been nice when it's like warm weather like it is today. It's like comfortable and nice to be outside. Right. I mean, speaking as an actor, the proximity of the audience shouldn't affect your performance. You have to put up that fourth wall and pretend that they're not there. And although internally it is a little bit awkward when they're like maybe a foot away from me and I'm like, wow, you're very close to me. But I just have to, you know, pretend that they're not there and just maintain, like, the fourth wall and be like, I'm in the moment, I'm in my performance, and sort of ignore them. It's a little bit interesting, but, like, you have to work with it, and the show must go on. And I'm just thankful to be able to do the show within the circumstances that we have.
It was a different experience for all involved, but one more sign of a return to life as we used to know it after a long year of pandemic-induced restrictions. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.